Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
What is a short squeeze? Somebody, please. What's a short squeeze? And Ted Cruz is trying to kill AOC. Did you know that? Israel's firing up the jets. And Steve Harvey is an idiot. Now, when I say Steve Harvey, now you can tell it's Friday, right? I've warned you. By the time I get to Friday and I'm on the air, I'm really snarky. I'm really snarky generally, but by the time I get through a week of hours and hours and hours of consuming all the garbage that's going on in our world, and then writing a devotional in the morning so I can stay in the Word and stay energized and remember that there's more to life and more to my walk with Christ than what mainstream media and social media and Facebook and Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro et al. Throw at me. So, important to remember that. But Steve Harvey being an idiot, when I say he's an idiot, I mean kind of a fool. And I'll get to that. I've got a lot to get to today. So what is a short squeeze? What's GameStop? Most of you probably didn't even know what GameStop is. Probably never heard of Reddit. Probably have never, you know, what's a feedback loop? I mean, all this stuff. All of a sudden, we're all talking about the investment world in the last 48 hours as things have gotten really interesting. And then Rush Limbaugh yesterday comes out. GameStop saga mirrors politics as elites attempt to prevent regular people from benefiting. You're not allowed to profit. You're not allowed to make that kind of money, the kind of money they do, Limbaugh said. So there's all this stuff going on. Okay. And there's a bigger lesson. There's a bigger story at play here. And then I'm going to get to all these other stories. Okay. So we're going to fly through this stuff. But then I found a great article on The Federalist because I had educated myself and was getting ready to explain to you what all these things are. Because, you know, it's normally buy low, sell high. But you can actually reverse that and you can go in a different direction. You can be a short seller, and that's a different game. But then I found this article on The Federalist, which I thought handles a lot of the nitty-gritty as well as the big story, kind of the overarching narrative, which I think is also behind how Donald Trump became the president in the first place, a certain level of populism, and the bit of the French Revolution and the big guys and the little guys and the Great Reset, like we talked about the other day, because you plebeians out there can be a problem, and we got to deal with you. And another thing Rush Limbaugh talked about with the elites, and why are all these big tech people and big hedge fund people and all these uber wealthy people, especially the tech people who tend to be younger, why are they liberals instead of conservatives? And a pretty interesting point there as well, which I was fascinated by. This is a great point, so I'll try to get to that. Okay, the rules here are simple. Heads, Wall Street wins. Tails, you lose. Get it? By Sean Davis at The Federalist. The traditional way, we're going to do a little 101 here, and then we'll get to the bigger story. The traditional way to make money in stocks was to find a company that was worth more than what its stock price indicated, purchase the stock at a bargain, and then make your money either through the company's distribution of its profits back to its equity owners or the appreciation of its stock price, right? Buy low, sell high. But you can also make money betting on a company to eventually circle the toilet. That's called shorting the market, shorting the stock. To make money off a company that's not making any, I love this guy's snarkiness. You short its stock by borrowing a share from an existing owner, immediately selling it and getting the cash proceeds from the sale, and then buying back the stock when its price dips and returning the share to the original owner. It sounds simple enough, but it's also extremely risky. Okay, short sales. So this brings us, go through all that stuff and then start talking about GameStop. So a major hedge fund had a massive and very public short position on GameStop. Okay, GameStop's a brick and mortar store where they sell different types of games and kind of gaming stuff and video games, all that stuff, right? So most of you guys probably never stepped foot in a GameStop in your life. So, but most brick and mortar stores are dying, and so GameStop looked like it was heading that direction. And so the hedge fund guys, and hedge fund guys manages a large collection of dollarinos, which they then manage, and everybody putting money into the hedge fund makes money based on what the hedge fund manager does. And a lot of these hedge fund managers are billionaires, okay? They're remarkably wealthy. So they're going to make a play on GameStop. They're going to short GameStop stock. Enter Reddit, a bunch of Redditors, you're like, what's Reddit? Go look it up. A bunch of Redditors who followed the stock market realized that this billion-dollar hedge fund had a problem on its hand. Due to a combination of factors, GameStop somehow ended up with more short positions than outstanding shares. Oops, that's a problem. The Redditors, and Reddit's like a, it's not, I wouldn't call it social media, although it is kind of. It's a posting board. You do all kinds of subreddits. It's a little less regulated than the things you're used to. There's a lot of people on there. The Redditors, these people that were going to get in on this, they could pull off what's known as a short squeeze. If they started buying up GameStop stock and refusing to sell it, they could crush the hedge fund guys as its short positions came due, potentially even driving them into bankruptcy, all while profiting in the market by purchasing a stock that was once in single digits and watching it approach 50, 100, 200, even 300 bucks. At one point, it's estimated that the losses accumulated by GameStop short sellers approached $5 billion. That's the hedge fund people. Down $5 billion collectively. So these are all these folks in this Reddit group called Wall Street Bets, and they just decided, this is the power of social media, hey, you know what? Let's get involved here. Let's hose the hedge fund managers, and many of them are like, but we love GameStop because we like gaming, and so let's stick it to the man, right? That's what's going on here. So at one point, these hedge fund managers, it's the beautiful part of it, really, we're down $5 billion, $5 billion, billion. Melvin Capital, the now notorious hedge fund with the huge GameStop short position, eventually required an infusion, they're borrowing money, of $2.75 billion in cash from an even larger hedge fund to cover its possession and remain solvent. And that's when the Wall Street empire struck back. Suddenly, the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, which purports to be a Wall Street regulator, air quotes, but instead operates as little more than a Wall Street and wall and broad soothsayer to a public skeptical of Wall Street's power, weighed in and intimated that it might investigate or even shut down the trading of GameStop stock. Then the Wall Street-backed trading apps and the Wall Street brokerages joined in, announcing they would no longer allow their users and retail investors to buy GameStop stock. That was where Robinhood came in. Robinhood is just an app you get. You can go buy and sell stocks all you want, and you don't have to pay a commission. Okay, so they jumped in because they're all in bed together eventually and said, yeah, the little guys, this is no. We're just going to shut it down. You can't buy and sell, which for all my eschatology friends should sound familiar, right? That's interesting. So what happens when you can no longer buy a stock? The price can only go in one direction, and that's down. And who's that good for? The big hedge fund guys. Interesting war, but let me broaden the context when we come back because it's really fascinating. We'll let this one go.
There's a man going around taking names.
Might want to listen to this.
And he decides who to free and who to blame.
There's a man going around.
Everybody won't be treated all the same.
You know what he's talking about, don't you?
There'll be a golden letter.
He's talking about the Lord Jesus, the King of the universe. That's the deal. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you. Friday, therefore, my snarkiness. Okay, we're talking about a GameStop. I'm going to elevate this out of short selling and hedge funds and the feedback loop and the short squeeze and Reddit and Wall Street Bets and all these aspects, and then look at the bigger picture. I'm reading from an article in The Federalist by Sean Davis. The GameStop saga isn't about finances. Okay? So what is it about? It isn't about, remember, there's always a bigger thing at play behind all the news of the day. Okay? What's happening right now, he writes, has nothing to do with hedge funds or free markets or pricing theory or any of that. What's happening right now is another front in the major war taking place in institutions and countries across the world. It's the elite versus the populace. That should sound familiar now, right? That's exactly what's going on here in America. And that's exactly what's going on with when I did the whole show, pretty much the whole show on Tuesday about the Great Reset. Go look it up. Go listen to the show. Grab it on Facebook, the Facebook Live, or get the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, you can get the radio show there. The Steve Noble Show. And go look at that. That's the elites versus the populace, or the plebeians, as I like to say. The plebeian, that's you, that's me. Plebeians, the little nobodies. The real story is how retail investors, the industry term for regular people who day trade now and then or have a small brokerage account for retirement or to buy stocks every now and again for fun, figured out how to take down a financial leviathan. It's not that Wall Street dislikes retail investors. It's that Wall Street views them as little more than commission factories for the big brokerage houses. Those rubes don't know anything. They're not sophisticated. They don't have the credentials or the pedigrees of the geniuses who simultaneously destroyed the housing market and economy in 2008, and they certainly don't have the power to move markets. Except in this case, they did. See, retail investors don't move markets until they do, which in the case of the Redditors bidding up the GameStop stock, they did. And that cannot be tolerated. The whole GameStop saga isn't about finances or politics. It's David versus Goliath, the have-nots versus the haves, the underdog versus the heavy favorite with the best talent and training and equipment money can buy. It's a perfect microcosm of the war between the populace and the elites, the individuals versus the institutions, the people versus the powerful. A bunch of internet randos found a way to take financial advantage of a company that had backed itself into a corner. They banded together, executed the strategy, and made bank. That means for us older folks, they made a lot of money. They used the exact same rules and systems that Wall Street had used for decades to hose investors out of their money. That was what the Redditors real, that was their real crime, because that's not allowed. You're not allowed to use the same set of rules for your own advantage, he writes. The rules here are simple, heads, Wall Street wins, tails, you lose. You're like, wait a minute, what'd you just say? Yes, you heard it right. Heads, Wall Street wins, tails, you lose. That means you always lose. The institutions set the rules, not you, the elite, not the populace, will determine what is allowed and what isn't, which is why this isn't going to stop with GameStop. It's going to replicate itself within and toward every major institution of American and global life from here on out, whether it manifests in protests or riots or crazy elections or entire nation states removing themselves from global super governments. The little guy versus the big guy, covetousness, greed, pride, etc., etc., etc. And how do you then factor in, throw all that stuff into the digital world, which is why you can do this. This is from the Daily Wire earlier today. Elon Musk adds hashtag Bitcoin to his Twitter bio. So what happens? Bitcoin surges by 20%. Just manipulating the market with a few characters. Hashtag Bitcoin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 characters, including the hashtag. And Bitcoin surges by 20%. After the CEO of SpaceX and Tesla added the hashtag early on Friday morning, Bitcoin prices skyrocketed by as much as 20%. He's done that in the past, having helped extend a rally in GameStop's share price after hours Tuesday after tweeting hashtag GameStonk and linking to the Wall Street Bets Reddit community. This is he's back and forth. Number one, number two, richest guy on the planet now, right? According to Reuters, shares of fast-growing Polish game developer CD Projekt soared 16% on Thursday after Musk tweeted, "The aesthetics of Cyberpunk," that's their game, "are incredible, by the way." An online retailing platform Etsy stock jumped 9% on Tuesday right after Musk tweeted, "I kind of love Etsy." And then people who are just... like, I think it was C.S. Lewis said, the human heart is an idol factory. Oh, Elon Musk says he likes Etsy, which means I'm going to buy Etsy stock. And it goes up 9% because Elon Musk, one individual, puts a tweet out with a couple of words. And boom. So there's stock manipulation all over the place. And why is that? Well, why do you think? Pride, covetousness, materialism, greed. The Bible explains it all. It shouldn't be shocking to any of us. Okay, let's move on. That's what Solomon was right, friend. There's literally nothing new under the sun. New news is old news happening to new people. Okay, just remember that. That's the beauty of a Christian worldview, by the way. You can look at the news and politics and culture and arts and media, both here and around the world, and your head can start spinning. But when you factor a biblical worldview in there, if it's robust and healthy, everything starts to make perfect sense. And the things that you can't make sense of, you understand that's not up to you. Why do bad things happen to some decent people? What's going on? Why does a good God-fearing person get a disease at an early age? That kind of stuff. You know what to keep your hands off of, but a lot of other things you understand. That's the beauty of a Christian worldview, which, by the way, helps you understand when the Bible says that you can have peace that surpasses all understanding and be anxious for nothing. It's actually possible. And I don't think it's possible for long, little spurts of it because of our fallenness. And I think the more mature you get in Christ, the longer those spurts can be. But it can happen, but only through a biblical worldview. So get out of Fox News and get out of the Daily Wire and get out of this, that, and the other thing. Get out of this show if you need to and get in the Word and shore up your foundation. Okay, speaking of politics, this is going to make some of you really happy. The Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, that's in Arizona, unanimously approved on Wednesday a full forensic audit of the county's election equipment after weeks of wrangling with state legislators. The Arizona County intends to hire independent firms to conduct two separate audits, one beginning on February 2nd and the other on the 8th, on its voting machines and other equipment. The investigators will look at the voting equipment's hacking vulnerability, verify that no malicious malware was installed, and test that tabulators were not sending or receiving information over the internet. Okay, that's good. Okay, that's what we need to see, an actual independent, hopefully, investigation, and then we'll see what happens. But now in Arizona, when the Trump campaign sued Maricopa County on November 8th over such allegations, a judge dismissed the lawsuit less than a week later after the campaign's legal team admitted that the number of votes it was challenging would not impact the outcome of the election. As if that's a reason to blow it off. No. If we're having problems at any significant level, even if it didn't turn the election in one particular state, you still should look into it. You should pursue justice. But we don't like justice. Because if we start acknowledging the existence of justice, then maybe there's a lawgiver. And if there's a lawgiver that's a creator, maybe he's going to hold us accountable. And we don't like that. See, there's that biblical worldview again. Getting in the way for some, making a way for others. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. We'll keep going right after this. Welcome back. Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. If you're listening on a radio or streaming online, just audio, God bless you. That's awesome. But I am such a goofball and so snarky and outside the box as a Christian communicator that if you really want to take your experience to a whole new level, go join us in the Facebook Live, because then your video here in the studio, video of the radio show. And so we have the commercial breaks that we talk and do different things. And then that adds a whole visual element. Somebody just asked me if I had brewskis behind me on one of the bookshelf behind me, which features all kinds of Star Wars stuff, okay? But then there's some bottles back there. But because it's a soft focus back behind me, you can't tell what they are. So somebody trying to maybe be judgmental is like, is that a brewski? And so I picked up one of the bottles, and indeed it is. It's a root brewski, root beer. Sorry to disappoint. So anyway, the Steve Noble Show Facebook page, and you can catch all the Facebook Lives or the videos that stay there too. So it's like a video podcast that just stays on Facebook Live, you know, as long as Facebook Live allows me to be here. And, I'm trying as hard as I can to get booted. How do you do that, Steve? Just tell the truth. That's all it takes. Okay, this is an interesting one. And by the way, the podcast of the show, of course, is available pretty much everywhere you would get your podcasts. The Steve Noble Show podcast of the radio show is there. Mike Lee Chip Roy urges Congress to censure AOC. Well, why would they do that? Well, did you hear about this, by the way? AOC charges that Ted Cruz tried to have her murdered. Now, I'm not kidding. Utah Republican Mike Lee sent a letter to his Senate colleagues Thursday seeking to censure New York Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Such an awesome sounding name, really. For dubiously claiming Republican Senator Ted Cruz tried to have her killed. The New York Congresswoman made her claim on Twitter, responding to her colleague from the upper chamber, that's the Senate, hysterically charging the Texas Republican with attempted murder after Cruz said he fully agreed with her on the need for hearings to investigate the stock trading app Robinhood. That was with all what we were just talking about earlier in the show, with GameStop and all that mess, right? So he agreed with her and said, yeah, we need to investigate this Robinhood. It all of a sudden shuts down trading. So it looks like they're in cahoots with the hedge fund guys, da 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 da. So she comes back and says this: I'm happy to work with Republicans on this issue where there's common good, before rejecting the offer, which she goes, but you almost had me murdered 3 weeks ago, so you can sit this one out. Happy to work with almost any other GOP that aren't trying to get me killed. See how this works? So this is, if you're a Trump supporter, especially if you're a Christian and a Trump supporter, then you are now part of the 500 or 600 people that stormed the Capitol on January 6th. You are now at heart, if not in word and deed, an insurrectionist. You are dangerous. You were there trying to assassinate. And if, even though you weren't there, your people were there. So you're guilty by association. And then you're a murdering, dangerous person, which is why we need to deal with you. We need to shut you down. You can't have place on social media. As a matter of fact, at some point, they're going to say you can't have a place in America. That's where this goes eventually, which sounds crazy, doesn't it? But not so much anymore. The 31-year-old congresswoman began engaging in the fanatical, fanciful rhetoric days after the attack, telling her followers on Instagram she did not feel safe hiding in the Capitol bunker because there were QAnon and white supremacist sympathizers and, frankly, white supremacist members of Congress. And that extraction point. Thursday's claim that Cruz tried to kill her, however, went too far for a pair of congressional colleagues. That's why they're out saying, hey, we need to at least censure this woman. Okay? But this is where we're at. And this is just only going to get worse, okay? And eventually, it'll just come down to not your political affiliation, but the fact that for those of us that follow Jesus Christ, you're guilty of hate speech and you're dangerous. Hate speech, Steve, I never say anything hateful. But yes, you do. You preach the gospel, that's hate speech. Didn't you know? It's hate speech because you believe. Now, let me just play the other side, all right? This is how this works. This is how we get the gospel and the hate speech. Watch. This is how you do it. Hey, are you telling me, Steve, that if I don't believe what you believe, I'm gonna suffer forever, like burn forever in a lake of fire or whatever in hell? If I don't believe what you believe, is that what you're telling me? Well, I'm telling you what the Bible says, but to answer your question, yeah. Well, you're crazy. As a matter of fact, I mean, I feel threatened by you. This is just a dangerous situation. I saw what you guys did at the Capitol. You were there to assassinate people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You want to rule the country. You want to try to force everybody to be a Christian. And I'm like, no, well, actually, no, that's fundamentalist Muslims. But keep going. And so it's hateful. Your beliefs in this whole heaven and hell and Jesus is the only way. So are you telling me, in addition, Steve, that 1.3 billion Muslims are all going to go to hell because they don't believe what you believe? Yep, they reject Jesus. Yeah, that's correct. Hindus? Yep. Buddhists? Yep. Mormons? Yep. What about Catholics? Some yes, some no. What about Baptists? Some yes, some no. What about Protestants? Some yes, some no. But if they don't believe what you believe, they're hellbound. Is that what you, yeah. Man, you're hateful. That's hate speech. Okay, got it? All right, here's how that works. That's how that works. Did you see this in New York City? And then Cuomo, of course, blames Trump for it. Now that he's gone, can you still blame him for everything? Of course. So COVID-19 deaths among New York nursing home residents rise by 40%. Well, the other side of that is because they underreported it by 40%. New York Attorney General Letitia James, God bless you, ma'am, a Democrat, accused Governor Andy Cuomo's administration earlier Thursday of underreporting the number of nursing home deaths by as much as 50%. She called on the state to ensure public reporting by each nursing home of COVID-19 deaths of residents both at the facility and at hospitals. So if we pulled them out of the facility and they went to the hospital and they died, even though they got COVID at the facility, but they died at the hospital, then Cuomo et al. Did not include that in the COVID death numbers for retirement centers. Right? I wonder why he would do that. New York State Health Commissioner Howard Zucker said in response that the state didn't underreport deaths, but acknowledged for months that it was only publicly releasing deaths of residents that occurred at homes, not those that occurred at hospitals. Now Zucker has reported new figures. The number of nursing home resident deaths rose from 8,740 to 12,743, about the same number that James' investigation posited. Wow, what a shock. Representative Elise Stefanik, can't remember how she says her last name. She's great. Urged James and the Department of Justice to subpoena Cuomo administration officials. The department, which was looking into the issue last year, will decide if an investigation is warranted, the White House said Friday. Let's see what Governor Cuomo said. In his first public comments since a scathing attorney general report finding New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration undercounted nursing home deaths. The governor on Friday argued criticisms of him were a political attack. Of course, quote, that was mean. Cuomo said when the federal government blamed New York and other states for the nursing home COVID-19 deaths. Where this starts is frankly a political attack from the prior federal administration and HHS, Michael Caputo, Democrat governor continued. Caputo, who was the Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs for the Health and Human Services Department under President Trump, fired back immediately in a statement, quote, early on, experts at the Health and Human Services Administration identified Cuomo's foolish executive order as a primary cause for thousands of nursing home COVID deaths in New York. He's right. I called him out on it immediately. Cuomo is personally responsible for thousands of unnecessary nursing home deaths, and he must be held accountable. We should be impeaching Cuomo, not Trump. I added that part. Let's keep going because there's something else in here. Oh, here we go. Cuomo said he understood the instinct to lay blame on government to find relief from the pain and suffering. I believe everybody did the best they could. I believe the federal government, CDC, I believe they gave the best guidance they could. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. He just said it's a political attack from the prior federal administration. But out the other side of the Cuomo's mouth, he says, I think everybody just did the best they could. You didn't, sir. You didn't. You basically created suicide bombers via COVID and sent them back into nursing homes. If anybody should be impeached, it should be him. Because he knowingly did that. All Donald Trump said was, hey, go down there, make your voices heard. Let's fight for the country and let's be peaceful and be good protesters. And we'll go down there and, you know, and cheer for the guys that are helping us and boo the people that are don't, essentially what he said. But what Andy Cuomo did was sent sick elderly people with COVID back into a nursing home where so much, such a high, about half of all the people that have died of COVID-19 in America are nursing home type residents. And like I said before, and this flows over into the Capitol and the way they're acting. Now they want to build a wall around the Capitol because all of a sudden the people in the Capitol, especially the Democrats, now you know maybe a little bit what it feels like to be a baby in the womb in America, especially a black baby, especially in New York, where there's more black people dying than there are being born, largely because of abortion. So when you can fight for your life, you do. But if you can't speak up for yourself, if you can't protest, if you can't show up and burn something and break something and spell something out on the side of a Starbucks, we'll just get rid of you. Whether you're old in a rest home or really teeny tiny in your mom's womb, if you can't fight for yourself, we're perfectly fine eliminating you. God help us all. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. Not looking to set a popular opinion. Don't really care about that. Not primarily coming from the right. Definitely not from the left. Trying to come from a biblical perspective, which means sometimes I'll upset even my brothers and sisters in Christ, in the church, because our allegiance needs to be to the truth. And if your allegiance is to the truth, you just call balls and strikes, and it shouldn't matter who's standing at the plate, whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump or a Democrat or a Republican, a Christian or a non-Christian. The truth is the truth. And you try to call it as best you can. That's what I try to do here on the show. And operating through a Christian biblical worldview all the time. And obviously don't get it right all the time, but that's what I'm trying to do. And that's why I'm not particularly concerned about reaction. You know, I know some of the things I say upset people, upset my own friends, and all that kind of stuff. And so, but that's what I'm trying to do, just so you know. All right. I was talking during the break and before the break. Let me put what's going on with President Biden into a context that you certainly probably have had or an experience that you've had. So we recently not only bought a house, we sold a house. We sold the house we were in and bought another house. So you know what it's like, and this happens too when you, this is what happens too when you go buy a car, but with a house in particular, and you've got, you know, pages and pages and pages of documents, and you, and how many of you stop and read them? You know, some of you do, but most of us, no. What do? You just, the mortgage broker, the lawyer, whatever, the lawyer, is just sign here, initial here. Sometimes they have the little yellow thing with the arrow on it, right? Right, sign here, initial here. And you just blast through 20 pages of documents and basically signing over your life for the next 30 years with all kinds of little caveats here and there and details. And this is the, and this is the, and this is the, and you're like, yeah, the sign. This is how I am anyway, sign. Where do I need to sign? Just show me where I need to sign. Sign here, initial. Okay, here you go. What? How much do I owe you now? $400,000. Oh, great, cool, great. All right, so whatever. Okay, so I think that's what's large. Sadly, I think that's largely what's happening with our new president. Is they're just shoveling this stuff across the desk. What's this for? Oh, it's climate change. What's this for? Oh, we need to help our transsexual friends. What's this for? Okay, where do I sign? Well, the only place to sign, sir, is at the bottom of the page. Okay, sign Joe Biden. So this is kind of funny. Ease up on the executive actions, Joe. President Biden is right to not let his agenda be held hostage, but legislating through Congress is a better path. Whoa, who wrote that? The New York Times. You believe it? Isn't that amazing? The New York Times. So they're talking about ease up on the executive actions, Joe. He's over 40 now, by the way. These moves are being met with cheers by Democrats and others eager to see the legacy of Donald Trump's presidency dismantled post-haste. Republicans, meanwhile, are grumbling about presidential overreach and accusing Mr. Biden of betraying his pledge to seek unity. In other words, things are going the same way they often do in Washington. But this is no way to make law. A polarized, narrowly divided Congress may offer Mr. Biden little choice but to employ executive actions or see his entire agenda held hostage. So remember, this is the New York Times, uber liberal, uber left. These directives, however, are a flawed substitute for legislation. They are intended to provide guidance to the government and need to work within the discretion granted the executive by existing law or the Constitution. The New York Times referenced the Constitution. There's hope, friends. They do not create new law, though executive orders carry the force of law, and they're not meant to serve as an end around the will of Congress. By design, such actions are more limited in what they can achieve than legislation, and presidents who overreach invite intervention by the courts. But legal limitations are not the only or even perhaps the biggest point of concern. Executive actions are far more ephemeral and easily discarded than legislation, which can set up a whipsaw effect as each president scrambles to undo the work of his predecessor. Just as Mr. Trump set about reversing as many of President Obama's directives as possible, Mr. Biden is now working to reverse many of Mr. Trump's reversals. With executive orders, there's always another presidential election just a few years off, threatening to upend everything. This creates instability and uncertainty that can carry significant economic as well as human costs. Bravo, right on, exactly right. What are they're thinking constitutionally here. Imagine that. And again, this is the New York Times, way to the left. Undoing some of Mr. Trump's successes is necessary, but Mr. Biden's legacy will depend on his ability to hammer out agreements with Congress. On the campaign trail, he often touted his skill at finding compromise in his decades as a legislator as reasons to elect him over Mr. Trump. The country faces significant challenges to recovering from the pandemic, from a global recession, from years of safety nets and institutions and trust being eroded. Now it's time for the new president to show the American people what permanent change for a better nation could look like. Ha! That's funny. Because that's not at all what's going on here. This is just about power, pure unadulterated power. That's what it's about. And sadly, we have a president who's over 40 executive actions now in 9 days, who's operating like most of us do when we buy a car, get a car loan, or especially when you sign mortgage documents. Sign here, initial here, initial there. Sad. But for us Christians, and by the way, if you misunderstand me, you might think that I'm advocating that we don't get involved with politics. If that's what you think I'm saying, you need to listen to this show more than once, because I've never said that. And I never would say that. And elections have consequences. That's one of the problems now, because I know some of you are saying, yeah, especially when the election was rigged. Okay, let's say it was. This country is just continuing to go downhill. Do you think it's going to get fixed in Washington, D.C.? I don't. But I'm still engaging D.C. I still speak truth to power. I do what I can. I try to vote in a way that's pleasing to the Lord. That's why I said the other day, let's start shrinking our America. Make your America a lot smaller. Make it your family, your neighborhood, your coworkers, your friends, your church, your community, and get involved there. Make a difference there. That sounds a lot like, what was that guy's name? Oh, that's right, Nehemiah. How do we build, rebuild a wall that's been down for 140 years, which just allowed rape, plunder, pillage of Jerusalem for all that time. And Nehemiah comes back with a broken heart for the people and the land, which we should have. And he's like, hey, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. You fix your backyard. You fix your backyard. You fix your part of the wall in your backyard. And you over there and you down there and you around here. And 52 days later, after 140 years of destruction, the wall's back up because everybody worked on their part. So I would encourage all of us, let's get over our fascination with Washington, D.C. Let's pray for them. Let's engage them. Let's engage our legislators. But let's grab a shovel while you hold a sword and get to work on your backyard wall in your community. What difference are you making where you live? This was unsettling. Israelis say they will attack Iran if Biden returns to U.S. nuclear deal. See, elections have consequences. Israeli officials have made the opposition to the Biden administration returning to the Iran nuclear deal known. Some have even threatened a military strike on Iran if President Biden revives the deal known as the JCPOA. An Israeli source affirmed this is to Breaking Defense in an article published on Monday. Israel needs to know, and fast, whether Washington plans to stop Iran's race to bomb or take action to do this, the source said. So they're ready to go. Elections have consequences. I don't read this with any joy or glee. And would Israel do that? Certainly they would. And we'll see what Biden does with the Middle East. Trump was, with Kushner, was achieving incredible things because the Middle Eastern countries were all coming around to the reality that Israel is not the problem. Iran is the problem. And now you've got a new administration, John Kerry et al., and they're probably going to climb back into a cozy little relationship, try to cozy up to Iran, which is then, it's unbelievable. Okay, let me finish with this. Any Steve Harvey fans out there? Really funny, right? Family Feud, that guy, Steve Harvey. Christian, right? Maybe not. Steve Harvey says, there's no one way to heaven. Internationally recognized comedian Steve Harvey stunned many of his Christian fans after he recently revealed that he believes there's more than one way to heaven. On Saturday, Harvey posted a video on his official YouTube channel titled How Steve Harvey Prays that shows the Family Feud host at Abu Dhabi's Sheikh Zayed Grand Mosque in the United Arab Emirates. Quote, there's no one way to heaven and no one way to paradise, Harvey declared. It's like television. Now there's what, over 800 channels on cable, and they're all pretty entertaining. So I'm pretty sure that to get to heaven, there's got to be more than one route. Because you set the rules, right, Steve? Because somebody watching another channel or taking another channel than you, they're still getting entertained, and they're probably still getting to heaven. By the way, is Steve Harvey a good theologian? No, he's a horrible theologian. But let me remind you, we're all theologians. It's just a matter of whether you're a good one or a bad one. But this is Steve Harvey, who from stuff in the past, I'm like, oh, he's a believer. That's so cool. Is he a believer? Does he believe in the right Jesus? I can't judge his heart. He's certainly wrong, though. And he's a Pied Piper for a false sense of security, because I'm sure he would say, hey, we're all God's children. And that's not true either. We're all God's special creation, made in his image, bear the mark, the Imago Dei. But only the people that put their faith in Jesus Christ are given the right to be called God's children. Wow. Can you imagine a mosque with the name Jesus on it, he said? Yeah, the world could use a little bit more of that, Harvey says, while standing outside the Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Mosque. Yeah, well, you know who's going to do that? Could bring all the world religions together. One big kumbaya. That would be the man of lawlessness once he's taken over by the devil himself. Steve Harvey, dude. If you're a Christian, you must submit yourself to what God says. And what God said in the flesh is, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father but by me. So I would say that all roads, in fact, lead to God, but only one road leads to heaven, and that's Jesus Christ. Everybody's going to stand before the Lord. Everybody's going to be at the great white throne judgment. But only those who put their absolute 100% faith in the finished work of Jesus Christ are going to heaven. Everybody else is not. I sure hope Steve Harvey figures that out before it's too late. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.